anywhere you like, where you fancy. It'll pound a box mixed grape, lovely mixed seedless grape, pound a box, anywhere you like, pound a box. Pound a box seedless grape.
There's a guy called Billy the Howler, he's not here anymore. He was a really large guy. Oh, I can't, it's so embarrassing. He would be like, £1 a box, and just really elongate it. And you'd just hear him bellowing down the market.
She once asked my wife, Jenny, this student, she said, I don't understand when I'm walking down Portobello Road, why people are shouting, panda bowls, panda bowls. Why would you have pandas, panda bears on the market? And my wife had to explain to her, it's not panda bowls, it's poundables, poundables, £1 a bowl.
We don't cry out so much like we used to. We'd like be four for a pound peaches, five for a pound nectarines, you know, two boxes of strawberry for a pound. It's a bit different, you know, there's not so much of a cry anymore. It's more of a whimper.
Hello and welcome to this Digital Works podcast. This episode is part of the Stall Story series and looks at Portobello Road Market in North Kensington. It was recorded and produced by Colville Primary School in 2011. We hope you enjoy it.
I've got this medallion. This was made in 1731 and it was made as a celebration for Admiral Vernon capturing Portobello on the Isthmus of the Panama from the Spanish. And they named the market, the lane, Portobello, after that victory. That's why it's called Portobello Road. Now, in Portobello Road, just opposite here, there's Vernon Arcades. You've seen it just in Portobello Road? And that Vernon Arcade is named after Admiral Vernon. And he, on this medallion, it's got six ships. And that was the six ships he captured the Portobello with. And on the other side, it's got him and the cannon, yeah?
Portobello Road Market. It started in the 1860s. There used to be some nuns living on the corner of Ladbroke Grove. They used to go out and collect their milk, and they would actually go to Portobello Road. When it first began, they sold all the local vegetables and those things that they grew in the farms around the area. In the early 1860s, they built a railway, and Ladbroke Grove Station, as we know it now, brought in a lot of people to live into the area. Those people needed houses, so all the houses were built around, and that changed the market.
Yeah, they used to push barrows home from there, from Covent Garden. Those big hand barrows, put their stuff on there and actually push it home from Covent Garden. So people used to line up with their barrows and they used to run to get their pitch. And they practically like to keep the same one. And if somebody else got in their pitch before them, there was normally a fight.
The produce that's sold has catered for the people that have moved into the area. So all those people who arrived, the Jewish community that arrived early on in the 1890s, so the market sold the type of vegetables and things that they needed.
And some of the first settlers in the area were Irish Navy railway workers who worked on the railways. Then a bit later, there's Spanish community that started up after the Spanish Civil War and more Spanish exiles from Franco after the war.
The one feature that stands out, which is very similar to what it was when I was young, is the stall holders, the veg and fruit stalls, which are still there. And many of the families that were there when I was a young boy are still there, trading in vegetables and fruit.
I used to work with my auntie. We had the stall outside the public house there, fruit. Always in the fruit business. My granny had 13 children in this market. Yeah. 11 lived, and she lost two. And when she used to have a baby, she'd have it in one day and be back in the stall on the next day.
My grandfather was here. And so I'm the third generation, and my son, who you've interviewed over there, is the fifth generation. And it was just a family business which was carried on and on.
My granddad, who died before I was born, I never really met him. He started up the market at the age of 11. My dad left school and he carried it on. And then when I left school at 16, I carried it on. And then my children will carry it on, I hope. That's basically it. It's just a family tradition.
Monica Dickens, the great granddaughter of Charles Dickens, recalled walking down Portobello in the 1920s. All along the gutter, rickety stalls and barrows were piled high with rags, torn jerseys, mismatched shoes, chipped china, bent tin trays, three-legged furniture, and malfunctioning appliances from the early days of electricity.
When I was a kid, I suppose about 7 or 8, and I used to come up to Portobello Road, it was quite drab. Local shops were cheap, but you still went to Portobello Road because it was even cheaper.
So we used to go around to all the rich houses and we used to collect newspapers, and we were very happy if we were given rags. Then we took them to a little shop which is just off the Portobello Market, and they gave us more money if we had rags. And then they could sell those rags, especially if some of them were quite good, you know, like jumpers or maybe cardigans, whatever. They could sell them on the stalls in Portobello.
There was another stall where they used to sell chickens, and they used to keep them alive in a small alleyway off Portobello Road, and they would kill them for the stall when they were needed. And the other thing, that we used to always eat a lot of rabbit. There was a rabbit stall, but with the advent of myxomatosis, that stall disappeared, and not many people eat rabbit like they used to in those days. It was a cheap food to eat in those days.
We had a cinema called, then it was called the Bug Hole. I think it's now called the Electric. It was very, very run down, and hence the name, a Bug Hole, because you literally caught bugs and fleas in there if you went in there, but most people had them anyway in their homes. With my friends, the favourite stall was if you could steal an apple, which you shouldn't have done, but you did, or you went through the gutters to see if you could find some old specky, that's rotten tomatoes and fruit like that, and you picked that up, and if you could eat part of it, you ate it, but you took it into the cinema, and then if anything happened, you could throw them around, which shouldn't really say, should I, but I've said it.
When we come up, we used to try and help our man and our grandfather out. And when we'd done what we had to do, they used to give us threepence, and we used to go over the picture palace, see Ring Ting Ting.
Well, when I was little, there was lots of people used to busk on the street. So they'd perform, like we'd have an escapologist guy used to perform out there every Saturday. He used to get people to tie him up in chains, and then he used to escape. And then, you know, we used to have a guy with an old, a wind-up organ and a parrot.
The antiques arrived after the Second World War, when there were a lot of bombed houses around the area. The rag and bone men would go round with a horse and cart, and they would gather all these old bits and pieces that people didn't want anymore, and they were sold on the market. So that's how the antique market started.
Well, our shop about 100 years ago used to be a dairy, and it used to serve all the local houses with the milk and the bread and that sort of thing. And my father bought this shop in 1962 and changed it into an antique shop, which is what it's been ever since.
In 1973, I started outside with a little stall, and I think I took £30 on the first day. And I then carried on trading, mostly in clocks. I was buying them for £10 and selling them for £18 and making a little profit. And then one day I had some really good stock and a lot of good customers, and I took £10,000 one Saturday, which was fantastic. I then bought these buildings with a partner, and we opened them up as an antique arcade, and on a Saturday this whole area is full of dealers.
I think my mum had her first stall in the market in 1984. And then she started getting a bit too much for her. So I came along and helped, and that was in 1989, which is going to be for a little while, and I've been here ever since. Our products haven't changed, which is very unusual in a shop in London. If you look in our shop, which I'm sure you'll do in a minute, these are the same things my father was selling 60, 70 years ago. And all these items in the shop were made over 100 to 150 years ago, so we always sold the same things.
It was all antique shops. Everything was antique. There were no cake shops, no cafes, no shops selling clothes. Everything was antiques, the whole market, all the stalls, everyone. It was always a lot of people busy buying antiques and selling. It was the biggest antique trading place in the world.
In 1964, I came to London and I shopped in Portobello Road. In the beginning, they didn't have like yam and green banana and sweet potatoes and eddos. We'll have to go to Brixton to get that type of food. But eventually, we start getting it here. My children hate going down the market with me because I see too many people to talk to. And it's not just hello and bye. We had to have a conversation.
I remember well going down Portobello Market in 1966. And we went into the shop in Portobello Market and we were so excited because we could rent a TV. We had it for Christmas.
A lot of traders would leave bits and pieces behind that they didn't want. So we'd actually collect like books or bits and pieces and take over one of the stalls that someone had actually packed up and went, and then started selling things. We'd make a few bob, a few shillings in those days.
I was doing selling junk, well, bric-a-brac, you know, and I had quite a bit of it, and I did it with a friend who also had some. And we thought, well, we'll try that. And it was good, it was good fun. You know, we had this stuff, and we went round looking for other stuff that we could find, even in skips, would you believe?
It was by accident, actually. We came down one day and took a stall in Portobello Road to get rid of a lot of things out of the house, and we had such a good time selling things, we came back again, and it became a habit.
I've done it every day since, well, every Thursday pretty much since 2002. We sell organic aloe vera soap, which costs £6 a bar in Harrods, and we sell it £2 each or any 3 for a 5, but that's the business model.
I lived in St. Irvine's Road from 1964. So I saw Trellick Towers build. I saw the Westway build their houses, and then the houses came, and I saw that built up, because I think it is 40 years this year.
Very unique. It wasn't like any other market. It had a lot of young students doing their sort of postgraduate pieces. They'd have lots of stalls out here with their last collections. You'd get just people with really crazy, wacky ideas. I remember one lady, she used to make hats that would be vases and hats out of cardboard paper. And just lots and lots of creativity and uniqueness.
Well, the flavour of the area has changed. A lot of people have become richer in the neighbourhood. The houses have become more expensive.
Well, it's become a lot more swanky, the market. You know, there's a lot of high-end, a lot of chain stores moving in where it used to be small, little independents. There's no Butchers in the Road now. Sadly, he closed down last week after, I don't know, he's been there as long as I can remember.
I think it's important to support local traders and have a local market. The big superstores are killing off the local traders, right, because they got the ability to buy their goods in bulk cheaper than local traders can buy their goods. And so there's a tendency towards local traders closing and supermarkets getting bigger.
Well, it's begun to change most in the past 10 years or so with big business moving in and trying to take over and big property developers buying up all the property and putting all the rents up and bringing in all the chain stores.
Very sadly, a lot of the big companies are moving in, redeveloping the arcades and pushing out the small traders whose livelihood it is, and we are all fighting against it.
And a lot of the landlords here, they're trying to sell their properties because the properties here are worth a lot of money. And they're trying to sell them because they're not making enough money from the antiques. And the 150 dealers lost their jobs on the corner. They told them they were just going to refurbish, and when they came to refurbish, they sold it to a modern clothes shop. We're hoping it keeps the antiques flavour to it, you know, because this market's been is famous all around the world, and we want to keep it that way. Otherwise, it would just turn out to be another Petticoat Lane, Camden Town. Everything's brand new, you get the same things everywhere.
We like the buzz in Portobello Road. We like, you know, the busyness of it all and seeing people and talking to people.
I do tell the ladies when they come to the store that they should all take home a nice English man with them. And then I show them a little English soldier. I give them a little wink, like that.
There is a road in London town called Portobello, an old farm track from Notting Hill to the top of Ladbroke Grove. Three kinds of market trade along Portobello, selling gold and silver antiques, fresh fruit and second-hand clothes. Come alive, come alive, come alive, Portobello, the world-famous road called Portobello. Come and taste the food here, you can eat it hot or cold. Fish and chips, rice and peas, kebabs and sausage rolls. Drink a beer in every bar along Portobello. You'll end up very drunk and need a taxi home. Come alive, come alive, come alive, Portobello, the world famous road called Portobello. Lots of famous people live around Portobello. Some you will have heard of, some you don't wanna know. People from every nation come to dance in Portobello. They come here to carnival, some even go home. Come alive, come alive, come alive, Portobello, the world famous road called Portobello. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Digital Works podcast. If you would like to know more about London street markets, go to www.stallstories.org.uk. Or to find out more about oral history projects, films and podcasts, visit www.digital-works.co.uk.